So I have a confession to make. I used to hate the Angelus. But as I got older and perhaps wiser, I've changed. And now I love it. And that's what I want to talk about today. How my views on religion, spirituality, and pluralism have evolved over the years. What drew me to Unitarianism, or in my case, Unitarian Universalism, and why I have left the practice of law and want now to become a minister. As I said, I grew up here in Dublin and was raised essentially unchurched, with an agnostic father and an atheist mother. But, as the joke goes, you can be an atheist in Ireland, but you either have to be a Catholic atheist or a Protestant atheist. And maybe these days you can be a Muslim atheist or a Hindu atheist or all sorts of other kinds of atheists. So I was distinctly a Protestant atheist. I went to the High School Dublin and occasionally attended Zion Church in Rathgar, and I actively participated in the church's youth group. And I also developed a disdain for the Catholic Church and all things Catholic. In particular, I despised the Angelus. I was offended that it was broadcast on RTE, as I saw that as perpetuating the special position of the Catholic Church in Ireland. And as we know, the Catholic hierarchy back then did have an oversized and, in many ways, negative influence on our society and government. But I've come to love the Angelus. I've learned to listen beyond the specific religious symbolism of those bells and hear their true sound. I now receive them as a wonderful invitation to take a breath, rest in the present moment, and pray or meditate for that minute. For me, the Angelus now resonates like a Buddhist monastery bell, a mini meditation retreat that is publicly announced twice a day. And I feel the same way when I'm sitting here in the church during one of Pam's Wednesday services, and I hear the bell of the Lewis outside clanging. That too is an invitation to return to the quiet, refocus on my breath, and reconnect with equanimity. Now, as a teenager, I did have a brief dalliance with evangelicalism. Yes, my way of rebelling against my parents was to become a holy roller. But I quickly got that out of my system and went back to being a resolute atheist. I wanted nothing to do with any religion. When I was at Trinity, I used to walk past this building almost every day, but I never thought of going inside a church. It wasn't until years later, after I'd moved to the US, gone to law school, got married, and had kids, that things started to change. Now, I've never believed that morality and religion are inherently linked, but after our daughters were born, my wife and I felt that we'd like to find some sort of spiritual community for them to grow up in. Perhaps that's not that unusual. After all, what is a Unitarian? An atheist with kids. So we went church shopping. And eventually, we stumbled into the local UU congregation, Mainline Unitarian Church in Devon, Pennsylvania. And the rest, as they say, is history. MLUC is a warm and welcoming community with progressive views and a deep commitment to social justice. And we really appreciated the open, creedless theology, the emphasis on the search for individual meaning and purpose, and the democratic congregational polity. The church was also a really positive place for our girls to grow up. We especially valued our whole lives, the wonderfully comprehensive, pragmatic, and queer-affirming sexuality education program that our denomination offers. We were quickly hooked, especially me. In short order, I became the chair of the worship committee, served on the board of trustees, chaired the strategic planning committee, and was recruited to the mission task force and a ministerial search committee. And I've also been the facilitator of our Buddhist meditation group and served on numerous other committees. Now, I imagine some of you know how that goes and can sympathize with my plight. But even that was not enough. I started to feel a desire to go further. Looking back, I think it started in 2010 when my sister Roz died of breast cancer. She was only 43. Initially, I was too angry and filled with grief. But over the years, I started to think about how, as an atheist in this country, she really had no one to guide her through her end-of-life experience, or even just to hold the space for her and her loved ones. For me, as a spiritual humanist, the existential events in our lives are fundamental to who we are as human beings. They deserve to be witnessed, respected, and honored for the deeply spiritual moments they are, regardless of a person's individual theology or lack thereof. But that sort of interfaith chaplaincy is sadly lacking in Ireland. My feelings were reinforced when in April 2020, at the start of the pandemic, my mother went into hospital for some surgery and when there, contracted COVID. She was 84 with several comorbidities, and was placed on a respirator. It was a very scary time. So many people were dying, and at that time, there were no vaccines or treatments. I was sure she would pass away too, and because we couldn't visit her, she would die a lonely and scary death. Fortunately, she did survive, and I'm glad to say is still with us today. But her near-death experience made me think again about the lack of proper spiritual care for many people in this country who do not fit comfortably into one of the main religions. By this time, my wife and I had separated, and I was engaging in considerable self-examination of myself, my life, and what I wanted to do for my future. I came to realize that although I enjoyed practicing law, I didn't necessarily want to do that for the rest of my life. Plus, like the lawyer in today's reading, I was increasingly asking spiritual questions. So I did a unit of chaplaincy training at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania, and then enrolled in the MPhil program in contextual theology and interfaith relations at Trinity. Those experiences convinced me that I wanted to become a minister. So I applied to Harvard Divinity School. I specifically chose Harvard not only for its deep historical connection to Unitarianism in America, but because it is intentionally the most diverse and religiously pluralistic theology school in the world. My fellow students come from multiple countries and represent over 35 different wisdom traditions. We revel in that spiritual diversity, and we are dedicated to learning with intentionality and humility from each other's traditions, even if they are radically different from our own. Too often, people unthinkingly dismiss the beliefs or rituals of other traditions and do not take the time to look behind the externalities and seek out the deeper truth, to look for the real wisdom and value in those beliefs and practices. And we're also sometimes reluctant to learn, I mean really learn, from the faith lives of others, what their lived spiritual experiences mean to them, and how their faith motivates and enables them to live their lives to the fullest. Sadly, that can be especially the case with those people with whom we share a common culture or heritage, or who are possibly closer to us in their beliefs than those from more exotic wisdom traditions. In today's reading, Jesus deliberately chose a Samaritan as the hero for his story, a person who his fellow Jews would not only look down on as an ethnic minority, but also despise as a religious heretic and not a true Jew. You see, the Samaritans were an ethno-religious group that, like the Jews, were descended from the ancient Israelites. They were indigenous to Samaria, in what is now the West Bank, and importantly, they were adherents to a similar monotheistic religion to Judaism, also premised on belief in Yahweh and their version of the Torah, which they asserted was the original and unaltered one handed down by Moses. And they also claimed that the Israelites' original holy site was Mount Gerizim, and that Jerusalem only attained importance later under a group of Israelite dissenters. So ethnically and religiously, the Samaritans were kissing cousins to the Jews, but as such, even more anathema to them than the pagan Gentiles. As they say, familiarity breeds contempt. I wonder, does anyone see any parallels to the sectarian divisions in this country? What Jesus is saying in the parable is that a spiritual person can learn much from a person of another faith tradition, and especially one who in many ways is similar in their religious beliefs, even if we fundamentally disagree on some theological or liturgical details. Moreover, we should judge that person as a spiritual exemplar not based on specific beliefs, but by the fruits of their faith. I recently had a personal experience of this. A chaplaincy colleague, a Catholic laywoman, was telling me about her total belief in transubstantiation, that the bread and wine in the Eucharist becomes the actual body and blood of Jesus Christ, and the awe-inspiring significance to her of the true presence. She explained how her belief motivates how she wishes to be in the world, her deep desire to manifest through her external actions the sacramental truth she experiences internally. She firmly believes that in the Mass, she is consuming the actual and substantial body and blood of the living Christ, and that he is physically within her, and therefore that she must seek to emulate him, to be Christ-like in everything she does. Hers is not my theology, but I did find her belief and how it inspires her profoundly beautiful. I saw the deep significance of that belief to her, and more importantly, how it was central to her work as a chaplain, ministering to people of all faiths and none. That was an eye-opening revelation to me, and it helped deepen my own faith. It made me reflect on what it means to believe, as I say I do, that everyone is inherently worthy and dignified and contains within them the spark of the divine. How should I act in the world based on that embodied reality, that sacramental incarnation in my heart? Now, please don't get me wrong. I am not suggesting that all religions are equally valid or life-sustaining, or that some religions do not cause great harm. Nor do I want to belittle in any way the significant religious trauma that many people, including, I'm sure, many in this sanctuary have experienced. I am well aware of the negative social and personal impact that some religious beliefs and ecclesiastical structures, including especially those in the Catholic Church, have had on people. Far too many lives have been ruined, spirits broken, and souls destroyed. To me, as a person of faith, those are great sins. And as a lawyer, many of them are also criminal acts. What I am saying is that without overlooking or diminishing those harms, we still need to go deeper, to transcend specific religious beliefs and practices and see how different traditions positively impact the lives of their adherents and enable them, like the Good Samaritan, to be more loving and compassionate to others. So, am I a Protestant atheist or a Catholic atheist? How would I answer that question today? Well, my conceptions of the divine have certainly evolved and expanded over time. My theological understanding is now more dualistic and nuanced. I do not believe in a traditional personal or interventionist God. But for me, it's no longer a simple question of theism on the one hand and atheism on the other. To some extent, I've maybe transcended those rigid concepts and now view things on a broader, more integrated plane. Whether we call it the spirit of life, the ultimate mystery, Buddha nature, the transcendent, or any other term of human approximation, I appreciate the immense holiness of that which we sense exists beyond the mere self, the spark which is in each and every one of us, and the spirit that permeates and surrounds all that is. Personally, I also do not have a problem using the term God as another metaphor, although I do prefer the Jewish tradition of using G blank D to show true reverence for the divine. Or better still, to be more gender neutral, G blank D slash DESS. And I'm also drawn to Buddhism with its concepts of non-theism and the salvific power of the Dharma. To me, sunyata, the absence of an inherently independent or permanent self, is another helpful way to contemplate the divine mystery of all existence and non-existence. In short, tell me about the God that you don't believe in, because I probably don't believe in him either. As a spiritual humanist, I am deeply invested in the spiritual realm. But I'm not just a humanist. I'm also a heathen who finds great spiritual truth in nature and through Celtic and other earth-based traditions. And I'm also very much a Protestant, insofar as my faith calls me to protest injustice and hypocrisy and fight for freedom of thought and individual conscience. But I'm also a Catholic, at least with a small c, in that I'm a universalist who sees great collective wisdom and meaning in many faith traditions. And although I don't consider myself a Christian, I increasingly appreciate the value of Christian theology and practices in expanding my own spiritual outlook. All that said, I am at heart a heretic, a proud dissenter and non-conformist, with an instinctively skeptical reaction to any creed or any supposedly authoritative statement of faith. So perhaps in the spirit of 1798, I reckon I'm a united Irishman, Catholic, Protestant, and dissenter. And I'm neither a theist nor an atheist, perhaps a trans-theist or a post-theist. So, Am I contradictory? Well, as Walt Whitman famously wrote, "Do I contradict myself? Very well then, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes." And for me, containing multitudes is the essence of being a Unitarian. Amen, and blessed be.